Tango Tango Papa 2000, October 5th, 2017.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from, somewhere in Colorado, along Interstate 76. I'm probably maybe 30, 40, 50 miles, maybe 50 miles from Denver. So, I'm on my way from the Denver area to Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So I have been extremely busy, of course, the past, it's been the better part of 2 weeks since the last podcast. So I've been pretty busy and I did end up in Oregon, and then up in Washington State, and down into California, and then now I'm on my way. I brought a load from California, and I dropped it in Colorado, gave it to a different driver, and then now I'm on my way to South Dakota. So about as busy as I want to be. So anyway. Lots going on. I guess if you follow the news, you had the, I don't know what they're calling it now, I guess Las Vegas shooter. A lot of times they'll eventually come up with a term for this. But I guess that's probably going to be it, is Las Vegas shooter. So, and it's kind of a mystery. Of course, this guy really kept to himself. And, a lot of times when you have someone they're planning some kind of criminal thing or certainly executing something like that, probably more on the execution side, but a lot of times even in the planning stages, when people are going to do something wrong, they feel compelled to talk about it. At least, talk about it with somebody. But in this case, the guy was just perfectly secretive. And, so it's kind of creating a big mystery. Because, if he hadn't talked to too many other people, and the people that he did interact with had no clue what was going on in his head, then he was planning this stuff, some sort of a thing where he was going to shoot out of a high-rise window at a kind of a large captive crowd, because he did it in Las Vegas, but he had rented hotel rooms, in Chicago and some other places, where he was possibly planning or thinking about doing it there, and then didn't follow through. So, regardless, of course, the curiosity factor, people want to know the story, they want to know his thought process, but regardless of that, we'll probably, unless something breaks, we're probably never going to find what that thought process was. But don't really need to know that, even though we feel compelled to, kind of need a story, need some sort of a storyline to kind of make it work in our own minds. Regardless of that, the guy obviously was a psychopath. And so as such, you know, and this may be the only crime he ever committed. I think they said he had some minor traffic infractions over the years, but otherwise he paid his taxes. He did everything, you know, strictly legally by the book. So this is really the only crime that we know that he, you know, major crime that he actually committed, which is not usually the way it goes. But regardless, the guy, you know, just we have to accept the fact the guy was a psychopath. And as such, you know, you don't know what's going on in his mind. There are people that... You just don't know what, you know, you could see them every day. You really don't know what's going on in their mind. So, you know, now fortunately a psychopath like this doesn't come along that often, or they're flawed in some other way. They've got some other thing that causes them. They're not that intelligent, and it ends up causing them to end up in jail. Most of them will, you know, are going to end up in jail. But once in a while, you'll have one that is very intelligent and is, has enough self-control to remain kind of perfectly private. As in this case, he was perfectly private. And, even that girlfriend, I guess, that he'd had this girlfriend for years, so-called girlfriend, and... the Asian woman, and apparently she didn't even know what was going on. So, but regardless of that, it happened, and there's going to be more things like this that happen, more traumatic things that, you know, there's been plenty of them that are going on, and I think there's going to be more of them. So the bottom line is this: what you have to understand, you know, how does a psychopath get created? I think that there might be a few, it's possible there's some genetic factors, but I think it's mostly environment that, you know, where something like this can happen. Now, his father, this guy's father was at one point was on the FBI's most wanted list. He had escaped from prison. He was described as a psychopath, and maybe there's something genetic there. But this guy was raised in that kind of an environment, you know, and the stuff just jumps right through. You know, he's sort of a social pathology. So. But regardless of that, these kind of things happen. And let's say that at least 50% of it, the reason this guy ended up psychopathic was because of his environment. And I think that's reasonable. I think it's probably more, but let's just say 50%. 50% of it was caused by the way, you know, the fact that he had a psychopath dad and broken home, et cetera, et cetera. So, if you can understand that, okay, you know, you can accept that. Yeah, he was... Here he was. He was in this environment through no choice of his own, through no fault of his own. He was born into that environment, and he ended up there may have been some chance involved, but he ended up as a psychopath, you know, and a mass murderer. Now here's the problem. The general public. You know, when these things happen, and they're you know, and it's increasing. I think that, you know, the violence, this kind of violence, not just gun violence, but just traumatic things in general, seem to be on the increase. And when this, something like this happens, you know, here you are in this world, kind of the media world, here you are in this world, kind of through no fault of your own, you're being exposed to real psychopaths. Now, if it was a 50% chance, if 50% of the guy's family could be, you know, his family upbringing, could, you know, you could blame his becoming a psychopath on that, then who's to say that you or your kids won't become psychopathic because of the trauma of what's going on? Because they're in the environment, and you know, at least let's say 50% was because they were raised in a psych. You know, they were in, found themselves through no fault of their own in a psychopathic environment. So this social, you know, kind of a social contagion. So how do you not be affected by that? You know, I was listening to a podcast earlier, and they were saying, "Well, we got to be careful because we're what we open ourselves up to because of things like this shooting." You don't have a choice. That's where people kind of fail to understand the way it works. You really don't have a choice. Because if you have resentment, any little thing that you have your favorite little resentment that's, you know, maybe you're aware of it, maybe you're not. But you have your little, you know, whatever your resentment is, and you won't let go of it, you are opening yourself. By default, the door is open, inviting whatever insanity to come right on in from the world around you, from the people around you, from the environment around you. Whether you like it or not doesn't matter. You can try to pretend like it doesn't exist. You can try to pretend like you can, that you're knowing about it somehow. You can you know, you can try to resist and do the opposite, or, you know, and you have people, you know, kind of, you know, trying to come up with silly little things to maybe stop the from being infected by this stuff. But the bottom line is that, you know, it says it right in the Bible. All who sin are what? All who sin are slaves. And so therefore, resentment being the sin, and here, you know, you find yourself in the environment through no fault of your own, horrible things are happening. You are open to them, whether you like it or not. Because you have resentment, you're open, you've opened the door, and the psychopath rubs off on you. You become a little bit of a psychopath, whether you like it or not. And people don't realize this. And it, you know, and it's because they don't want to realize it. Because, you know, I can tell people until I'm blue in the face that they're opening themselves up, what they're doing wrong, how they're opening themselves up to all kinds of problems, to the sewage around them, the social sewage around them, and people just discount it, and they say, "Oh well, whatever." But at the same time, or they'll say, "Oh well, I don't resent my whatever. I don't resent my." Usually, you know, we start out resenting our parents, whether the parents are there or not. you that's those are the people that you resent, because those are the first people you encounter. You know, little kids come into this world sort of looking at their parents as if they're infallible gods, and of course they're sorely disappointed with them, and they resent them, and that's and you become what you hate. But not only do you become what you hate, if you hate, you're going to become what you, even if you don't think you hate it, the sewage around you is gonna come right in. You have no immune, you have no spiritual or social immune system. So I think that's worth pointing out. Will anybody listen? I don't know if anybody, I'm going to keep saying it over and over again. I don't know if anybody's paying attention. There may be some people listening. I don't know. I never know, unless somebody tells me. I don't know. And it really doesn't matter whether I know if this has helped somebody or not. It really is irrelevant. So, but it's worth keeping that in mind. You know, and it's not such a high, it's not such a great idea to keep resentment around. And of course, the big reason people keep it around is because it's the lie. You know, I'm really God. I'm, you know, God in my own mind, sort of striking people dead with my thoughts, with my resentful thoughts. And of course, that's a lie, because all it does is open you up to the sewage, the social sewage around you. You become part of the sewage, whether you like it or not, because all who sin are slaves. Resentment is a sin. So, anyway, it's under 5 minute audio clip from Joel. So I'm going to be playing that in just a bit. Probably responding to it. Excuse me. And then also, October 1st was my date. That was the date when I could upgrade phones. Now, I wasn't able to upgrade on October 1st, but however, yesterday I was in, I found myself in Grand Junction, Colorado, and I was kind of, I had to stop. I stopped there. I don't know. It was probably about 9:30 in the morning, and I was pretty much out of hours. The hours of service. So I was pretty much out of the 70 hours. I just had a little bit of time left. So I went ahead and just stopped there and took a break. A more than a 10-hour break there at Grand Junction. Because I had to wait till the next day, and after midnight Central Time, to get new hours back, and so-called recap hours. So, but I found myself there, and I thought, hey, is there a Sprint stores around here? And so I looked, and indeed there was a Sprint store about 3 miles away. And so what I did. I walked 3 miles to this mall, the shopping mall, from the truck stop. I walked, it's kind of down a I-70 business loop in Grand Junction, Colorado. And I was at the TA truck stop. It's a little tiny TA truck stop, is where I was parked at. And so I walked to this shopping mall. There was a Sprint store inside there. And went ahead and upgraded to the Note 8. And so, I thought about walking back afterwards, but I don't know. It took a whole hour. At least it took me an hour to walk up there. you know, the 3 miles. And so I thought about, you know, I could walk back, but I really needed to get back sooner than that, back to the truck, so I could get ready and go to bed, you know, to finish the workout. And so I ended up taking an Uber. It was the first time I ever took an Uber. And I have to say, it worked really well. From the time I pressed the thing to call the Uber, it took maybe just, you know, it was just a few minutes. And I was even able to text the driver and tell him precisely where I was, because in this mall there was a Target store, and so the Target store had a regular Target store entrance beside the mall entrance, but so they had an outside Target store entrance, and so they had benches near the entrance, and so I was sitting on one of those benches, and so I texted the driver, "Hey, I'm sitting on a bench at the front of the Target store entrance." So and then the neat part about it with Uber is that it, you know, it sort of, you can see in real time, here comes the Uber, and of course it tells you the driver's name and then what kind of car it was. It was a Hyundai Excel, I believe. I think that's what it was. I think there's a Hyundai, I believe that's what it was. So anyway, Elantra. Hyundai Elantra is what it was. It was a red Hyundai Elantra. It didn't give you the color, but it just said it was a Hyundai Elantra. And so that he got there and was able to take me back to the truck stop. It cost me, it was $7.70 for the ride itself. And then I'm kind of a cheapskate when it comes to tips. So they had some choices there, $1, $3, and I'm not sure what the third one was. It was either $5 or $10, which that would have been a bit excessive. So I'm kind of a cheapskate. I gave him a $1 tip. So you know, it was worth it, because in it, you know, it really sped the got me back to the truck a lot quicker than it would have if had I walked. So anyway, I got the phone, and I think I've mostly got it set up the way I want it. I really like it. It's really a responsive phone. One of the areas where I can see that, you know, I had to go ahead and send in the trip documents to the company of the trip that I completed and early this morning. So I, you know, of course, the app uses the camera, uses the phone's camera as a sort of a scanner, and then it does some processing to turn that, you know, is able to, you know, detect the edges of the document, and so then you crop the image, and then it does conversion to basically it makes it look like it was scanned in a regular like a flatbed scanner, and you know, it's kind of a black and white type of document, and with the old phone that would, you know, it would take a little while. You know, and so if you had very many pages to do, it was, you know, it would add up. But it's still easier to do it that way than it would be to take it inside the truck stop and use their scanner. It's still going to be faster doing it in the truck. But with this new Note 8, that document processing part, I could tell if that was happening quite a bit more rapidly. So it happens pretty fast. So I'm pretty happy with the performance of the Note 8. So battery life seems really good, much better than the S7 that I had. So really a nice phone. I think I am very happy with it. So easily the best phone I've ever had. Next to the Note 7, I really liked the Note 7, you know, and I hated to give that up, but, you know, had to, and so that was that. But now I'm back to having the note series, and of course you get the stylus. And so I will start since it's been about a year since I've been using the S7 Edge with no stylus. So now I'm going to have to start remembering, hey, I got a stylus again, so I can start making some use of it again. So anyway, got that. And as I say, I'm very happy with the phone. Great, great device. So anyway, I think now we're going to go ahead and begin to listen to Joel. So here is Joel.
Hey, Tom. Hope all's doing well with you. I just wanted to send you a Vox, mostly because I'm curious to see how you're doing. And also to talk about a couple other things here with regards to how things have been going with the presidency and the country as a whole. There is an interesting discussion I had on a post from one of the news channels about a couple of the Trump people having issues with travel budgets and stuff like that. And I spun to one of the more liberal people on the conversation, and I said, if this bothers you so much, where were you when Obama spent millions of dollars traveling? And nobody, that's the other thing that I'm wondering too with the Obama presidency, how much their staff spent on travel other than Obama. And somebody spun back and said, just like the trumpets to deflect to Obama. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm pissed no matter who wastes the money. You know, I'm not exactly happy about how Trump's golfing stints near the beginning of his presidency. I'm not happy about a lot of what he does. But I'm not happy about Obama either. I wasn't happy about that either. And it just goes to show you how just utterly in love they were with Obama, you know. Obama could do no wrong. Trump does no right, even when he does right. it's sickening, you know. And I've been called the Trumpet, even though I don't fully 100% support President Trump, but he is my president. And it's just they were in love with Obama. Obama could do no wrong, even when he did wrong. And it was even proven further in that same conversation where someone says, well, I don't mind the president who made a gay marriage legal and all that, you know, all these things that they were in favor of, having a nice place to stay. And I'm like, well, there's your bias right there. You know, that's it. None of that, absolutely none of that has to do with how much he spends. None. Zero. Nada. In fact, we have parts, you know, when the president moves office, leaves office, they usually are set up in office by the government for them to do whatever they're going to do after their presidency. And we spent $500,000 on Obama's. The most ever, if I remember right. So, you know, but they never say anything about that. They never say anything about that, ever. Ever. They nitpick every single little thing Trump does. Like his comments down in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is a whole other problem. But, you know, and these people can't seem to get out of their heads that there are others that believe differently than they do. So, anyway, that's one.
And so that was the end of Joel's file. So I don't know if he, what happened, or if he was going to talk about a second topic or not, but he didn't do it. So anyway, that's all there was. So thank you, Joel, for the comment. They're going to hate Trump. They're trying, the news media, the so-called deep state, the certainly the Democrats and the Republican leadership, all just despise Trump. They hate him. They hate what he stands for. He is a disruption to, you know, their agenda, you know, because they had a whole timeline worked out where the United States was going to lose its sovereignty. And, and then they'd end, you know, they had this timeline worked out where there'd be, eventually it would be one world government, and they would make it seem like it was all organic, that it just kind of organically happened. But of course it wasn't. But he messed up their timeline. He represents a total obliteration to their timeline. And so they're trying to find any little thing, any little nitpick, anything they can. And they're like the little kid. Just think of them as the little kids in a supermarket checkout line throwing a fit. But the difference is, you know, they try to, you know, whatever they try to paint Trump as or whatever. The difference is in the way Trump himself doesn't react. And that's what has them, it's throwing them into conniption fits. And it, you know, and so that's why Trump is there. Trump is not there to, we're going to fix this law and fix that law, and we're going to have a conservative president and a conservative Congress, and they're going to fix all these things. That's not why Trump is there. Trump is there to cause them to react, you know, or, you know, and, but the, you know, not even that, they're reacting to Trump. You know, Trump's not perfect, but he's pretty much a reasonable, you know, guy. He represents what, you know, America has stood for, you know, millions of Americans. Trump, certainly, whatever you say about him, Trump does love the country. And so they're all going insane. And so be it. And it's the same thing. Same thing with all of these, you know, the hurricanes. You know, and the hurricanes, the shooting, all of these things happen. They're, as I was talking in the front of the first of the podcast, you know, all of these things are happening. People get upset. They're, you know, all emotional. They're all upset, et cetera, et cetera. And the social sewage is continuously infecting them, reinfecting them. And that's by design. You know, you want to talk about, you know, look at the Book of Revelation. That's really, you know, and people are arguing, well, we're in the end days. Well, maybe we are, maybe we aren't. But certainly things, there's a lot of traumatic things, potentially traumatic things happening. And so the question, you know, you can't, the question really is, are you, you know, you want to insulate yourself from this stuff. You want to close the doors so that you're not infected by the social sewage. Give up your resentment. You know, where's your relationship with your Creator? Because, you know, I contend that if you have a real relationship, then you're not getting upset by all this stuff. You're, you know, because the very fact that you're upset, the very fact that people get upset, is the evidence of a lack of the proper relationship with their creator. You know, and so this world really, you know, what is it? You know, it's hard for us to say. We're sort of in the experiment, but it's not, all is not really as it seems. Let's just realize this. If God created everything, and he did, God created everything around, you know, the entire universe, including us, all of us, then we all serve, you know, we're serving a purpose. And so even people that are screwed up end up serving a purpose, end up serving a function. You know, in the Book of Revelation, it talks about the 144,000. You know, the percentage of people that actually, I think the percentage of people that actually find their creator is probably maybe 1% or part of 1%. There's a lot of people that think they have, they think they've got it, and they don't. So I think, you know, you can use this, you can use this, use all of these traumatic events as a way of, as a kind of a means, as a sort of a real world test of the relationship that you have, or that you think you have. Or maybe it'll cause you to, you know, suffering can cause people, sometimes suffering can cause people to, you know, there's nowhere else to go. They've tried everything else, and then they start becoming rational. So all of this is for, you know, serves a purpose, and, you know, and then at the, you know, and of course I can't quote it directly, but it, basically, the Bible also says to kind of pursue the thing to the, you know, completely to the end. Eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, what the Lord thy God has prepared for those that love him. But you got to be in the world, but not of it. And resentment causes you to be of it. Very, very simple. People getting all emotional about this and all emotional about that. Does that solve anything? No. Solves nothing. People are frittering the gift of life. People are just frittering it away. Frittering away the energy that God gave them. So Trump is fulfilling his purpose. You know, and again, the purpose isn't, you know, pass this law and pass that law. That's not his purpose. his purpose is to, you know, kind of cause the corruption to show itself as corrupt. And these things are, you know, it's kind of like more and more and more extreme reactions or things that, you know, the way people are reacting, you know, that serves that also is serving a function. And these people are just slowly burning up, boiling away. So anyway, my headset is kind of acting weird. You know, I've got this Bose, I think they're QC15s that I've had for, I don't know, I've had them for several years now, and they've worked pretty well. But I don't know, the volume, you know, when I'm talking into the microphone, the volume is kind of, you know, it should be perfectly mono, and it's kind of shifting around. Now, it may be, you're probably not going to be able to hear it in the recording because that's mono. But what it possibly is probably have dust in one of these knobs on my little M-Audio device. I bet that's probably what it is that's causing the thing to shift around. So, anyhow, I'm going to see if I can get this thing put together and uploaded. And I've been, the past, I don't know, the past week or more, I've been kind of driving at night and then kind of sleeping in the daytime. And so hopefully I'll be able to kind of flip things back around and where I'm sleeping at night and driving in the daytime. You know, it's because I have to say I sleep better at night. Although, you know, I can close the curtains and really make it dark in here, and it's perfectly comfortable, you know, and I can make it completely dark in the daytime regardless of, you know, what the temperature is outside. I'm perfectly comfortable, but, you know, I do sleep better in the daytime at night than I do in the day. So, should be able to flip that back around. So, anyhow, hope everyone is having a great week. It's getting, I guess today's Thursday, tomorrow's Friday. My week's actually been pretty good. So, in any case, I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.